Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
What are the four secrets to creating a life of meaning? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here, helping you to achieve your full potential 5 days a week. And in just a minute, we're going to talk about crafting a life that matters. But first, don't forget to visit leadx.org, where you'll find hundreds of articles from the best business and career writers out there, and sign up for our quick read newsletter, which is packed with actionable tips that you can try out right away. leadx.org. Our guest today is an editor at the Stanford University Hoover Institution, where she manages the Ben Franklin Circles Project to build meaning in local communities. Her writing has appeared in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, The Atlantic, many other publications, and she's the author of The Power of Meaning, Crafting a Life That Matters. Our guest is Emily Esfahani Smith. Welcome, Emily.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Oh, our pleasure. Emily, we're going to talk about the power of meaning in just a minute, but I always start with this basic question, which is, can you share with our listeners a time when you failed, maybe early in your career, and what did you learn from it?
Of course. So I my career is as a journalist, a writer, and editor. And so when you decide in college or as you're graduating that you want to become a writer, typically the path is that you go and you work as an editor at a publication, so at a newspaper or at a magazine. And then while you're editing other people's pieces, you kind of do writing, your own writing on the side. So that's what I did when I graduated. I was editing at a newspaper. And one of the articles that came in one day was by a pretty influential literary writer. And he, you know, we talked on the phone for a little bit, and he said that he was really excited to work with me. And so I started editing his article, and I could see that it was about, you know, 4 lines too long. So at one point in the article, he kind of listed a series of stores. His article was about, you know, kind of the, you know, the importance of stores. And so he listed a series of stores, and there were a bunch of stores on the list. And I thought, well, this is an easy place to delete. I can just, you know, get rid of some of the stores, and then the article will remain more or less intact, and it'll be short. So I sent the article back to him, and he was really upset by the deletion that I made, and called me up and actually started yelling at me on the phone. And you know, he lost his cool, and I freaked out basically because I thought, oh my gosh, here was this really important person, and I had made him upset. So what am I going to do? So, you know, when you're editing, you know, the thing that you want to do is you really want to make the person that you're working with feel happy and comfortable, because you're taking their words and you're trying to, you know, make them better with, you know, in the way that you can, but you also don't want to alter their voice. And so I had clearly, you know, failed in that task. I had not kind of understood him enough and not understood the piece enough to see that, you know, that he saw some merit in writing it the way that he did. And I should have probably, instead of just deleting that line, I should have gone to him and said, you know, the piece is too long. You know, where can we delete, and made it more of a collaborative process than the presumptuous kind of process that I made it by just, you know, taking the stab on my own. So now I think I'm a little bit more collaborative and a little bit gentler in my approach with editing.
Emily, that's a great story. And as we're both writers, and it's probably made you gentler with your own editors when they all of a sudden try to delete some of your words, and you realize they had no idea what they were doing to you. But hopefully you didn't yell at them the way you were yelled at back in the day.
Right. No. Yeah. No. I think I've seen both sides of it. So I do try to be a little bit understanding as well.
So, Emily, your new book is The Power of Meaning, Crafting a Life That Matters. And, you know, so many people today are unhappy. There's tons of books out there that are on the bestseller lists about how to, you know, find more happiness. We're all spending so much time or money or even chemicals trying to get more happy. But I also think that a lot of people are sort of chasing the wrong thing, and what they're missing isn't even maybe happiness. Can you talk about the difference between a happy life and a significant life?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, people, you're right, that there's this yearning for well-being. You know, we all want to feel happy. And so, you know, so we buy these happiness books. And yet I think that, you know, happiness is something that when you, the more you chase it, the further away that it gets. And what people are actually looking for when they chase happiness is, as you said it, a life of significance or a life of meaning. And so what's the difference between a happy life and a significant life? Well, happiness is defined as a positive emotion, a positive mental and emotional state. So when you feel good, you're happy. When you feel bad, you're unhappy. But meaning, the meaningful life is bigger. So the meaningful and significant life is defined by connecting and contributing to something that's beyond yourself. And when people say that, you know, that they feel their lives are significant and meaningful, it's because three conditions have been satisfied. So the first is that they think that their lives matter. So that they believe their lives have worth. The second is that their lives feel driven by a sense of purpose or something worthwhile that they're doing with their time that often involves contributing to the world. And finally, they understand their lives as coherent, which means that they don't think of their experiences as random and disconnected, but as part of a larger narrative, a larger whole. So you can see those definitions are very different. And the thing about the meaningful life is that when you pursue that, it can often be an effortful and hard life, because some of the most meaningful projects that we have, whether it's, you know, raising children or writing a book or, you know, being a good leader at work, are really effortful and they can be frustrating and stress inducing. But ultimately, when we do them, we're left with this deeper sense of well-being and happiness down the road.
It makes a lot of sense in how we can, even if we have moments where we wouldn't say we feel happy, we still have that deeper satisfaction of having that significant life. And you say that there are four pillars to crafting the meaningful life. And unfortunately, we don't have enough time on the podcast to go deep into any of these, but that's why our listeners are going to rush out and buy your book. But summarize them for us. What are the four pillars?
So the four pillars are purpose, belonging, storytelling, and transcendence. So these are the building blocks of a meaningful life. When I interviewed people about what makes their lives meaningful, when I turned to the social science research, when I looked at the philosophy and the literature, these were the four themes that came up again and again as the building blocks of a meaningful life. So purpose. So purpose, we talked about it a second earlier, but the definition is a goal that organizes your life and that involves making a contribution to others. So, you know, one person's purpose could be, you know, curing cancer. Another person's purpose could be more local, like, you know, being a great teacher and helping mentor younger people to help them rise up in the world. Belonging is about relationships. So we hear all the time that relationships are important to well-being, but belonging is about a particular type of relationship, one in which you feel valued by others and you feel like you matter, and where you treat other people like they matter and like they're valued. So, you know, you can imagine, you know, with your partner, you two treat each other like you care for each other. You can share a moment of belonging, holding hands or having a conversation at dinner time where you're both really tuned in. Or you can cultivate belonging in smaller ways, like, you know, checking out at the grocery store and just asking the teller, you know, how's your day going? Giving them a compliment, making someone else feel valued. Storytelling is the next pillar. So this one is really about your own life story, how you understand yourself. So storytelling is the act of taking your experiences and weaving them into a narrative that explains who you are and where you came from. And some stories are healthier than others. So psychologists find that people leading meaningful lives tend to tell redemptive stories about their lives. So stories that move from bad or from some kind of adversity to good. So, you know, this bad thing happened to me, but then I ended up growing or becoming more compassionate or finding a sense of purpose. And it turns out that the stories that you tell about your life can actually lead you to lead more meaningful lives. So the story actually changes how you behave. Finally is transcendence. So the word transcend means to rise above, and transcendent experiences are ones in which we're kind of lifted above the ordinary waking consciousness that we experience day to day and feel connected to something bigger. So for some people, these experiences occur in prayer or in meditation, where their sense of self kind of dissolves as they feel connected to God or some higher reality. For others, it can occur in nature, you know, walking through the woods and feeling connected to something larger than yourself, or even, you know, listening to music or viewing art.
I wanted you to get through all that. I'm jotting down questions like crazy. So the four, you know, purpose, belonging, storytelling, transcendence. But something that jumps out is, I mean, there's no right answers here, right? So it's possible to get a sense of belonging just from our relationship with our partner, our significant other, or from being active in our church or being committed to our team members at work. Am I hearing this right? I mean, it's really in the eye of the beholder, so to speak.
That's right. So the thing about the meaningful life is it's a life that we each have to craft for ourselves, and we have to find these sources of meaning on our own. And, you know, no two people are going to have the exact same sources of meaning, though there might be overlap. So like you say, you know, maybe a lot of people find belonging at work or in their families, but maybe someone else finds it in an unusual community that they're a part of. Like in my book, I write about this group, the Society for Creative Anachronism, which is a group of medieval enthusiasts who find a real strong sense of belonging through their membership.
That's a fairly unique one. I gotta give them credit for that.
Yeah.
So many of our listeners are first-time managers, mid-career managers, and, you know, something that they struggle with is keeping their team members, the people around them, engaged at work. You know, we know from the Gallup data and others that about two-thirds of people at work are not engaged, which is really, really sad given how much time we all spend at work. So how can we as business leaders, you know, sort of foster more meaning in the workplace on our immediate teams?
That number one driver of engagement, as I understand the research, is when employees feel like their work is meaningful to them. So the question for managers and leaders is, how can you help employees find that meaning in their work? And there's a couple of examples that I'll give before I kind of zoom out and talk about what the answer might be. So there's a story that goes in 1962. John F. Kennedy was walking through the halls of NASA when he saw a janitor, and he asked the janitor, you know, sir, what do you do here? What's your job here? And the janitor responded saying, Mr. President, I'm here to put a man on the moon. So that was an example of, you know, NASA clearly kind of had inculcated this culture of meaning and made everybody who worked there feel like they were part of that broader purpose of putting a man on the moon, regardless of what they did, regardless of what their day-to-day tasks are. Another example is the company Life is Good, which is an apparel brand. So it sells these t-shirts and hats that say Life is Good on them. And as the company started getting going in the early years of its founding, they started receiving letters from people, from their consumers, who really were moved by the simple message that life is good. So, for example, they received letters from, you know, people diagnosed with cancer who said, you know, wearing your apparel really helped me get through chemotherapy. It helped lift my spirits and realize that despite my adversities, you know, life is good. Another person who wrote in was a widow who lost her husband in the 9/11 attacks, who said something similar. Now, the managers at Life is Good, they take these letters and they occasionally read them to employees at company-wide meetings so that each employee knows that no matter what they do, whether they're a receptionist answering the phone, somebody, you know, loading boxes with apparel at the warehouse, or a designer of the t-shirts, that they all realize that they're part of this larger purpose to help people live with more hope and more optimism. So I would encourage managers who are listening to this to figure out, what is the value of your group or of your company? How is it contributing to the world? And how can you help your team leaders, the people who are working for you, connect what they're doing to that larger goal?
Yeah, it makes so much sense. And it's, you know, what I hear in that is both sort of mission and goal, or the potential for each. And a lot of times we talk about, you know, making sure we focus on the ultimate why, you know, the mission of what we're doing, whether as a company or as a team inside of the company. And when you talked about, you know, putting a man on the moon, I couldn't help but think about the work of Jim Collins, who talks about organizations need to have a big, hairy, audacious goal, a BHAG that, you know, everybody can rally around, everybody can see how what they do day to day, even the janitor, you know, can align to that bigger goal and bigger purpose. That's great. So, Emily, before we wrap up, I like to challenge our listeners to become 1% better every single day. Is there something you can challenge them to do today?
Yes, I think that living with meaning is ultimately about making a difference in the world and contributing to something that's bigger than yourself. So I would encourage listeners to think of one thing that they can do today and that they can do every day to make the life of somebody else better. So what's one thing that they can do to contribute to those around them and to the world around them, whether that means giving somebody a compliment or helping their neighbor shovel the snow off their porch. These small acts of meaning make a big difference in lighting up the world.
Love it. A small act of meaning. It can change someone else's life as well as your own. So, Emily, what's the best way our listeners can find out more about you and your work?
They can visit my website, which is emilyesfahanismith.com. And from there, there's information about my book. You can take a quiz on what your source of meaning in life is, and you can connect with me on social or email me if you'd like.
All right, friends, you've just been mentored by an expert in positive psychology. Don't forget, you can get all of the links that Emily just mentioned and notes from this interview over at leadx.org. You can get Emily's new book, The Power of Meaning, from Amazon.com or your favorite bookstore. And LeadX Nation, one more thing. If you got even one new idea from the LeadX show, I hope you'll go onto iTunes or Stitcher, subscribe to the LeadX show, and just leave a 1 or 2 sentence honest review. It would mean the world to me. So until next time, let's remember, leadership isn't about a title or power or authority. Leadership is influence. We are all leaders. The question is, who are you going to lead today?